Well, the Competition Watchdog's Deputy Chair, Mick Keogh, will be facilitating the ACCC's water market forums. He, in fact, grew up on a family farm in southern New South Wales in the Murray-Darling Basin. He's with me in the studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Is John Kennedy right? The problem lies in that the plan has created unprecedented demand for water.
The plan basically created a market for water, although those markets did exist prior to the plan. And markets do what markets do. Those who can afford to pay more, pay more. We see it in the Sydney housing market. We see it in a whole range of markets. So our job is to look at that market and look at how it's operating and make sure it's operating fairly and competitively. And that's what we aim to do with our inquiry.
Is it fair to compare the water market with other markets like the ones you refer to? Because in other markets, you can do things to increase supply when prices fluctuate. You can't create more water when you don't have it.
That's correct. But there's lots of other markets where there's a defined volume of a commodity and trade occurs. So it's not abnormal, but
what's an example of that?
It does create a challenge. Any market in any year, a grain market in any year, if you look at the grain market at the moment, there will be, you would suspect, an increase in prices because the harvest has been pretty poor and there won't be any ability to increase that volume until the next harvest.
Can I ask you about something else John Kennedy said in that interview, though? He said that drought is not factored into this system. Is that a fair point? Because drought is a reality for Australia.
Drought is factored into the system, and I'm not going to argue one way or the other, because our job is really to look at objective facts and look at the information. We've got quite extraordinary information gathering powers that we can use as part of this inquiry, and I think at the end of it we'll be able to paint a very clear picture of a lot of these issues that up until now, the information is very fragmented. It's not collected in a comprehensive way. So I think that's the benefit of the inquiry we're about to undertake.
I want to explore the submissions and the problems that are being raised with you. But I wonder if you could explain for our listeners this morning simply how the water market functions.
Okay. I'd explain it in these terms. Irrigators have what's referred to as an entitlement. And that, the best description I can think of is that that's like a share certificate in a company. It gives you a percentage of access to the resource. And then each year you have what are referred to as allocations. So an allocation is your dividend, if you like, from that share certificate for that year, or the amount of water you're going to be able to extract that year. And you can trade both those. You can trade your permanent right to extract water, or you can trade just the amount of water you have available that year. And farmers make decisions on that basis. Each year, if cotton is low in value and water's tight, it may be better to sell your water rather than grow a crop. Conversely, cotton prices are good, water's available, you might buy in some and get some more. Where it gets more complicated is people have struggled to understand, for example, inter-valley trades, that you can trade water from the Murray to the Murrumbidgee or down into South Australia. That's where it takes a while for people to get their head around it, but it works
quite well. This is the sort of
stuff
that Chris Corrigan was talking about when he came on this program, explaining how they ended up with water in one place, having purchased it effectively elsewhere.
Yeah, and that's part of the system. I say to people, think of it as your family household. You can take water out of any number of taps. Ultimately, the water that you take out of the system will be the same irrespective of which tap it goes out of. So if you think of the Murray-Darling Basin as a large storage system, it's got a range of different taps that irrigators use to take the water out. It doesn't matter much where it comes out within a few constraints, as long as the ultimate balance is maintained in terms of how much goes out in total.
In terms of the submissions you've received so far, what are key problems being identified?
Well, we've only just opened up submissions, and it's probably a bit early to speculate on those at the moment.
But you would be aware of the core problems that people are flagging with the way the water market is working. Could you outline that for us?
Well, the issues that were raised as part of the start of the inquiry were concerns about participants in markets cornering the market, using their scale to drive prices in a particular direction, in a sense, potentially profiteering out of dry seasons and speculating. And a lot of questions have been asked about that. Our inquiry will allow us to investigate that in very high-level detail and provide some answers around those.
I mean, we've spoken to folks like Duxton's, which have been accused of speculating and profiteering by effectively water hoarding. They flatly deny that. Can you offer us some insight into where the truth lies?
I will be able to by the time our inquiry is finished. We have information gathering powers which require businesses like that to furnish us with all the details of their water trading since 2012, trade by trade. So we will get a very forensic look at how the market has operated and the behaviour of participants in those markets.
Is transparency a key factor here?
We in the ACCC often look at markets and find transparency is a very important factor. It's not the absolute answer, but a little bit of sunlight shining on participants in a market does marvellous things to behaviour in markets.
Some grower groups have written to the Water Resources Minister, David Littleproud, alleging that ongoing unconscionable conduct by some traders and brokers is undermining market integrity. They say the market is lightly regulated, corporation, consumer and competition laws are not enforced, and brokers are not registered. Is there a question here for the ACCC about enforcing the law in the water market?
That will ultimately be a question we'll look at. We've certainly
You'll look at yourself.
We've had matters that we've looked at in detail, and the inquiry obviously will turn up a lot more detail. And it wouldn't surprise that out of the back of it might come investigations of particular behaviour. We've seen that pattern with other market studies we've done in electricity, in banking, etc. So the amount of detail we can collect in these inquiries ultimately often provides avenues for further investigation.
Can I just get a straight answer, though, on whether you would consider whether the ACCC is properly enforcing the law? Because that's the detail that's there.
That's certainly something we'll consider on the way through.
And you're open-minded about that?
Absolutely. We don't have any preconceived notions. And that's part of the value of this inquiry. As a lot of participants have said, it really is time to have a very clear, very open look at it, put all the cards on the table and see what that shows us.
If, as you say, there are other markets that have similarities to the water market where you can do things to influence the price, what are the options available to Australia to bring the price of water down without lots of rain falling?
Well, if you look at electricity markets, if you look at telecommunication markets, you can consider a range of market rules to make sure those markets operate properly. It varies market by market, and I wouldn't want to go down the track of presuming what those might be, but certainly in every market we look at, there are market rules. The ASX has market rules, and it's whether those are operating properly or not and what changes might be needed is ultimately the consideration we'll have in relation to water.
Will you make a determination on what a reasonable price for a megalitre of water is? It's now at $800, up from a long-term average of about $135.
Yeah, and during the Millennium Drought in 2008, it was, in fact, at levels higher than that. So we won't say what the price of water should be. The market will determine that, but we will say whether we think the market is operating properly so that the price reflects the available demand.
So how can we interpret that to consider the current price of water?
Well, the current price of water is what it is. When you look at, for example, the northern storages in New South Wales, they're all on about zero. The Dartmouth, the Hume, Hume's on about 40, Dartmouth's on about 50. So,
but if you're saying it's the connection between the price of water and an indication of whether the market is working properly, can we deduce from the $800 price tag that many irrigators are saying is too high for them to sustain a business, that therefore the market is not working properly?
No, I don't think you can make that deduction. I think you have to look carefully at how the market's operating. look at where the behaviour in the market is such that it's distorting those prices, but otherwise make sure competition is working, and that's how markets work.
You grew up on a farm in the Basin region, I think near Holbrook in southern New South Wales. Are you familiar with the impact that the water market, and particularly the separation of water title from land title, is having on communities across the Basin region?
Oh, absolutely. I travel very widely through regional Australia constantly. So these issues are exacerbated in the current drought. They've been ongoing for a long while. There's a multitude of factors at play, one of which is obviously the change in the water market, and particularly the limits that have been reached. I mean, the cap on the Murray-Darling Basin was the first stage of that. We've seen further developments in terms of returning water to the environment, which means there's less water available, and that is definitely having an impact. There's a socioeconomic study on at the moment, and it's looking into a range of those issues at a community level. Our focus is very much on the water market and how it's operating.
There is a huge amount of emotion, though, involved when you go to regional communities and talk to people about water. I think there's a fair degree of conspiracy theory as well about the way the market works and who's responsible for problems within it. How are you going to separate all of that emotion, all of those theories and beliefs, from the reality of how this market functions?
Well, I think the main tool we have available to help in that regard is the fact that we can access detailed water trading information from 2012 onwards from all participants in the market. We've already had discussions with state governments, and we will be shortly sending out notices to major traders and participants in those markets. So that will turn up at the end of that process an absolutely comprehensive and forensic opportunity to look in detail at all these issues. And that's really what this inquiry is about.
8 years ago, you chaired a federal government review of drought support measures. What's your view of the current drought support system?
Well, in that inquiry, we were very strongly in favour of the farm household support system, which basically makes sure that farmers that have got no income have food on the table without having to sell up. I think that's been quite an important factor in this drought, and that's been good. We did also recommend a range of other measures to increase preparedness. And I think, unfortunately, one of the facets of political cycles in Australia is that the only time drought policy is talked about is in an extreme drought. And unfortunately, since 2013, there haven't been any other serious measures to prepare better for the next drought. And that's where we are now.
Very quick checklist of the things they didn't do that you recommended?
Well, we indicated a couple of things we thought needed to be looked at. One was the development of appropriate insurance markets that allowed risk management to occur so that farmers could look at opportunities, take out risk management if they felt they needed it. The second thing we also discussed in detail was looking at environmental programs where farmers are producing environmental outcomes through conservation areas, etc., creating a series of payments for those which can generate carbon emission reduction as well as biodiversity benefits and become very drought-proof sources of income on farms. Both those, I think, still need serious looking at.
Mick Keogh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Hamish.